Deborah M. Pratt is a significant force in Hollywood. She's an American director, writer, television executive producer, and actress. She was executive producer for The Net for USA Network, co-executive producer for Tequila and Benetti for CBS. She wrote multiple television series, including Magnum P.I. and Airwolf. She made her directorial debut with Cora Unashamed for the BBC, PBS, and Masterpiece Theatre's The American Collection. Ms. Pratt is a 5-time Emmy nominee, a Golden Globe nominee, a recipient of the Lillian Gish Award for Women in Film, the Angel Award, the Golden Block Award, and 6 BEN Awards. Deborah M. Pratt's vision is an inspiration to audiences worldwide. A master storyteller with a spiritual dream for a better world, Ms. Pratt breaks the mold of science fiction and creates a genre of science fantasy with the soul of the universe and a key to the human heart. Intricately layered with scientific fact and fascinating detail, The Vision Quest is a riveting journey into the future of our world. The books have a spiritual theme. Her latest book, Age of Eve, Return of the Nephilim, is published by Broad Lit and was released February 26, 2013. The Vision Quest books and Age of Eve are available wherever books are sold. But we know Deborah Pratt best as the co-creator, co-producer, head writer, and the voice of Ziggy from Quantum Leap. Well, thank you for joining us today, Ms. Pratt. I would like to start off by just asking you, how did the idea of Quantum Leap come about?
Don wanted to do an anthology, and it was the 13-letter dirty word that everybody was terrified of. He had also wanted to do a show about time travel. There was a book that he had tried to buy that had nothing to do with Quantum Leap. And I had been reading A History of Time and came across this whole concept of the fact that when particles leap, they basically coexist for a moment in two places. And said to him, what if when he traveled in time, he only traveled in his own lifetime? And what if he, because time and space is limited, which was in this very deep, very wonderful book, he couldn't come in as a new person. You and I are talking on the radio. He couldn't come in as a third person. He had to replace one of us. And Don said, what would that give us? And I said, well, first of all, like the great anthology shows of Thriller and, of course, The Twilight Zone, you would have what people come back to, which is a reoccurring character. But the cool thing about it, and then I said, do you remember a show that was on called The Loretta Young Show? And every week, Loretta Young would come out and introduce the show, but then she would go back and she started in every episode as a teacher, as a doctor, as a wife, as a whatever. I said, what if he stepped into these various lives? And Don said, oh, wow, and he'd have to find out who he was and why he was there. And so then we kind of started to build it from there. And he wrote, the first episode, making Sam a scientist, and I was a real geek for the colliders and particle accelerators and things like that. So I exposed him to how time travel could happen if you could shift your particles. But it always had to be from one existence into another. And those existences, like those original quarks in A Short History in Time, would have to flip out. And they would simultaneously change, one to be where the other one was. And it worked, obviously.
Yeah, great idea for a series. And it turned out to be an amazing series and something that's in pop culture and everybody knows about. What's that like, being responsible for creating something that pretty much everybody on the planet knows about?
It's an honor in the sense that it's a great show. It's very morally based, so that you have a hero and the hero goes out and makes the world a better place. It was exciting. It was exciting from a creator's point of view to come up with something that made, you know, Thursday night or Wednesday night or whatever night we happened to be on, because we were on 5 different nights during our, 99-episode run. That made the world a little bit better. It gave people hope. The show was about hope, which I don't find on much television these days. As a writer, it was a dream because I wasn't writing a doctor show every week or a cop show every week. I could write whatever I wanted, from a drawing room comedy to a heavy drama to a socially informative storyline that said something about who we are as a society, who we are as people.
I think that's my favorite part of Quantum Leap is all the episodes that have a moral or a message in them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're responsible for writing a lot of them. I think all of your episodes usually have something to say and are about something. And that's why we do this podcast now, is we examine each episode and we talk about what morals, messages, or meanings we can get out of it. So we really appreciate you writing those episodes.
Thank you very much. I feel like entertainment is such an incredible medium of inspiration that you can, like I said, make the world a little better through music, through film, and television is so intimate in the fact that we are invited into people's homes to tell a story, and why not question life and make them think and see another perspective? And I think Don and the network and the studio were very nervous at first. I think the first episode I wrote that dealt with it was What Price Gloria, where Sam leapt into a woman, and then we got such a great response from that, that when I said, let's write him into a black man in pre-civil rights South, they went, wow, okay, yeah. And we got to comment, and I think that was the beauty of the show, too. The ability to comment on the world historically from the perspective of a person living in present day. So we could talk about sexism and racism and all the isms that are out there. We did a show about gays. It was very, very cutting edge for its time, but no one felt threatened by it because it had happened in the past. So it was a safe zone to talk about life that still exists today and make you question those values, those morals, those realities, but from a safe distance.
Do you think any of the topics that were covered in Quantum Leap have gotten better over the last 25 years?
Well, they've definitely gotten better, but they're also backsliding. I mean, you look at a show like, again, What Price Gloria and Women's Rights. And right now, that's a very, very hot topic. And the fact that the government thinks they have the right to tell a woman what she can do with her body. You know, we're living in a time where that's a question of civil rights. In that there are states right now that are trying to repeal what was fought for in the civil rights movement. So, yes, we move forward, but at the same time, there are those who are very powerful and wealthy who would prefer us to move backward, who would prefer to take away those voting rights and women's rights and our health issues. I mean, we did some pretty incredible shows and try to say something, and not just with the kisses in history, you know, but, you know, we talked about in a show I wrote, Seabright, about dumping garbage into the ocean. I mean, I always try to interject some socially relevant information. In that case, it was just kind of in the background of a story, but it was a comment that Al made or a comment that Sam made that showed we have advanced because ships aren't allowed to do that anymore. However, there's a floating island of plastic bottles the size of, like, the state of Texas or something in the ocean. So there are things that the show can still make you question and think about. What's happening with the nuclear waste spill from Japan? You know, those kinds of things we need to keep. We have to keep evolving, I guess, the point.
Do you see a day in the future that all these things will just seem logical to everyone and not just a few of us, and the world will be a better place?
Well, we would hope so, right?
I hope so.
But I think it's the responsibility of entertainment to bring to the surface the fact that it is not okay. The fact that we are still dealing with sexism and racism and, you know, what's happening now in Russia with Putin not wanting gays and the Greeks not wanting gays, arresting gays, that still goes on, that people can't choose their way of life in countries like India and the Middle East, also the Middle East, that women's rights are threatened and jeopardized all the time. So, yeah, we're evolving as a planet, and I think entertainment is an incredible information tool, education through entertainment. We don't need to hit you over the head, and I think Quantum Leap did that so beautifully. We told a story, And in that story, you as the audience had the opportunity to watch it and decide what side of that story you stood on. And we didn't judge you for your choice. We just wanted you to know we get it, and you should too. So
you were co-creator, co-executive producer, head writer, and you even acted on Quantum Leap. What was that like, your experience working on Quantum Leap, being a co-producer, and what were your responsibilities, and how did you like it?
You know, it was, again, it was a dream come true. A, to see something that you imagined come to life and have a life, is like creating a child. Every day I went to work and, you know, I would get in and usually try to work on whatever script I was writing on. I would then go to the set and check on making sure everything was there, then making sure the cast was great and Scott and Dean were great. And then I would come back to a writing session where people would pitch shows, or we would talk to the writers about the shows that we were developing so that we knew where the season was. From there, you go to the editing bay and sit and edit a show. So you had to carry about 6 shows in your head at one time. The one you were prepping, the one you were writing, the one that you were prepping, the next one that was shooting, the one that was being edited, the following one that was being spotted for effects and music. It would be great to go over and sit in the scoring stage and hang out with Ray Bunch, Delton Ray Bunch, and in the beginning, Mike Post, and really talk about what you needed for a scene to embellish it. To sit with David Belisario, who was amazing at acquiring the music of the time, which, you know, I don't know that I'll ever forgive Universal for stripping the original music out of the show when it went into DVDs, because they didn't acquire the DVD rights because DVDs didn't exist at the time. So the music that's in those shows is, in many cases, different from the original shows. Those kinds of things. But it was a great day. And then that day didn't end until very late, because then you were looking at dailies from what was shot that day. And then at night, on whatever night we were on, you would sit down and you'd watch the show and check the numbers to make sure that the audience had found us and yet again, and how we were being received and where we sat in the Nielsen. So it's your life, but it was a good life. Scott and Dean were great people. We had a great staff. We had a great crew. We launched the careers of some incredible people who wanted to do the show, because it was the last of the real guest star shows, as far as I can see. You know, now they have these big ensemble pieces, and it's very hard to be a guest star on a big ensemble piece because they're servicing so many people. Well, it was Scott and Dean, and mostly it was Scott. So when you were a guest star on the show, you carried that show right along with Scott to tell the story. So it was a full day.
Talking more about the music, do you know if there is a Blu-ray project coming up eventually where Quantum Leap could be on Blu-ray, and if Universal would pay for the music rights for the Blu-rays? Because so many fans are upset about the replaced music.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I tried to fight for, but, you know, everybody now knows the money that's made, and they want their cut, and they want their share, and the powers that be are not willing to give that up. They would rather have us, the audience, and I put myself in that category, not get what was so wonderful about the piece. So I don't know if they could find a way around that. But to own the rights to a song in perpetuity for all mediums that exist now and will exist in the future is a hard thing to sign off on. And hopefully they would. I think they would. That would make people want to buy the DVDs and be willing to pay for Blu-ray. If you wanted them to be unique, that's what they should
be. Right. I think if they had the original music and, you know, some added content, some bonus features, people would scarf them up. I know a lot of people online, basically they buy the DVDs, but the episodes without the original music, they try to find them by hook or by crook somehow to hear the original music.
Oh, yeah. I have to say, I probably shouldn't say this, but one of the fans, and I don't have his name in front of me, I thank him every day, had recorded on air a VHS of every episode in its original format, even with the commercials, which are freaking hysterical, from the early 90s, and gave me a set.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're beautiful. I mean, they're absolutely beautiful because they weren't digital. They were, you know, they were still analog, and they had all the original music on them. So I'm converting them because we just don't know how long these technologies last. That's the sad thing. These VHSs, what kind of life they have, and I guess it depends on how you store them.
Temperature and such.
Temperature, right. But just over the years. It's not, you know, film, you shoot a film, and we did shoot on film, which is, I think, one of the beauties of the show. It was shot on film, but film, you can take a film that was shot 100 years ago and pull a print off a negative. No one knows if VHS or digital will do that. It's just too soon to know how long those will stay before they correct.
It's very lucky that they were filmed on film, so one day they can be on Blu-ray and maybe formats we haven't even dreamed of yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a quick technical question about that, curiosity. Was it filmed in the 4x3 format, or was it filmed in widescreen and then cropped to a 4x3 format? Do you remember?
And I remember it was 4x3. It was shot for television. I know when I directed Court Unashamed, we did, you know, a film frame, and then we aired it. But as I remember, it was 4x3, at least in the beginning. It may have changed over the course of the show. It may have. I'm trying to sit here and reimagine sitting and watching dailies and what format they were in, but as I remembered, it was 4x3.
It's always funny to see them in high def now on television, and you see little things that nobody could have possibly seen back then on the old-style video screens back then.
Oh, like what?
Maybe production things that you weren't supposed to see. One that comes to mind, it's silly, but from the episode on the train, the lady has her blouse taped onto her, and you can see it in high definition pretty clearly. And just different strange things, you know, that I always look for them. I wanted to ask, you know, they say write what you know. Do a lot of the things you wrote about come from your own life experiences?
I'm sure parts of them do. And there are elements, and I'll give you an example. When I wrote Song for the Soul? No, I can't hear the title. The episode where Sam left into the black teenager and they had a girls group.
I think that was A Song for the Soul.
Okay. Ooh, good memory. And she was fighting with her father because he was trying to control her singing for the church versus singing in popular culture. And at that time, I was fighting with my husband about something similar, and the fights came out in the episode, literally, almost word for word. So in that respect, yes. Was I singing in the church choir and my father was a reverend? No. But you can take the core of your life emotionally and translate it into a reality to tell the same story. The story is, let me grow up, don't control me, let me be who I want to be, and just love me because I love you for who I am, and let me have my wings to fly. And that was, I think, a well-received message. Certainly there was sexual harassment coming up through Hollywood ranks in my years here that played out in shows, and racial, and What Price Gloria. And I'll tell you a very funny story. So I'm writing What Price Gloria, and in the last scene, he's got to tell his boss that I'm a man. Remember that scene?
Yeah, very
and
funny.
He goes, what do you mean? He goes, I'm a man. So then I realized I've never been a man. So I went into the writer's room and sat everybody down, and I said, tell me your most, how did I put it? It was, what story would be the most male of you realizing the difference between, you know, that you are a man? And the stories that I got were hysterical. And it came down to, you know, having an erection the first time in high school and having to walk around with your books, and all of it was in there. Because it was what made this guy know that these are things that only a guy would know, that a woman would never think of. But I couldn't have thought of them had I not had a great writing staff that I worked with to say, okay, guys, get up, here's donuts, tell me your story. How to pitch a ball, how to you know, what sports means to me. And there were great stories. We were a great team in that way. And it was fun for me because I got to learn. Now, I had children, so when Sam leapt into a teenage pregnant girl, poor Scott, he was in labor for 3 freaking days.
That was in 8.5 months, right?
In 8.5 months. But I bought him what was called a maternity belly, and he could strap it on. And it was about 40 pounds of weight, and it had hot water bottles in it, and it had pellets that laid up against your kidneys and made you go to the bathroom, and he had to walk differently in it. So it was a real education for Scott, too, how to wear a dress and what it felt like to sit on a cold chair wearing a dress and high heels and how to have a baby. What does it feel like to be in labor for hours and hours and hours? So, yes, I used what I knew about being a woman, about being Black, about being a singer, and then I used what Scott had to offer because he was so talented.
He seemed like he was game for anything.
He loved the challenge. He really did. And Dean was an amazing actor. And when we wrote a couple of shows for him where he really had to show his stuff, he came forward like nobody had ever seen. And my favorite story is I wrote an episode for Troyan, who was 4 years old at the time, and Dean knew her and had come up as a child actor, and he scolded me and said, "Why are you doing this to her? Go let her be a little girl. Don't take away her childhood." And so literally I turned down all kinds of offers for Troyan very early on and said, "I so respect this man, and if you want to be an actress when you grow up, you got it," because she was a natural. She is a natural. If you watch Pretty Little Liars, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's doing pretty good right now.
She is. She's doing great. And Nick is doing terrific. He's in college studying to be a computer engineer. I'm blessed. I'm very blessed.
It's all about the children.
Yeah, you know. And Quantum Leap is one of my children, what can I say?
Are there any issues that you didn't tackle on Quantum Leap that you wish you would have?
Oh, my gosh. So many. So many. I mean, and we did really well, but I have to tell you, that show could have gone on forever. It was just so on its own. They moved us so many times because they had nothing like it. No lead-ins, no lead-outs. You know, the rumor is always that Don's going to bring it back on Sci-Fi Channel. I hope they do that. I really do. I actually set it up for him in the third episode of the trilogy where Sammy Jo Fuller, we find out that Sammy Jo Fuller is Sam's daughter, and that she's in the future working for the organization trying to bring him home. I had actually wanted to do a motion picture about that. But if they do a new TV series, I think they're crazy not to do Sammy going after her father.
Is that the question you get most often? I know just doing the Quantum Leap podcast, we get asked all the time if we have any knowledge of a movie or a rebooted series coming out because everybody just loves it so much they want more.
It's really difficult. Again, I've heard very recent rumors that Don's trying to do a reboot, either a reboot of the series or a spinoff with Sammy Jo. I started writing a novel and was talking to Universal about doing a feature film, and it got stalled because I guess the Sci-Fi Channel wanted to do it as a TV series, and somehow or another, Universal, NBC, Sci-Fi, so many people own it that it's really hard to get it away because everybody knows it's still a viable arena.
Yeah, I think it would be a hit.
In whatever form. It just, if they capture the truth of what the series was about, which is hope, it's about somebody stepping into your shoes and making your life better, saving the person that you couldn't save, going back in time and undoing a wrong and making it right.
It's just an amazing show, and I love it. I've seen it all the way through, and my podcasting partner is watching it for the first time, and she's loving it. And
it is timeless.
It is. It really is, and it doesn't look like an old show at all. Maybe that's partly because each episode's almost a period piece.
Exactly. No, we got away with it, and, you know, even the right, I thought I was doing a new show for NBC this season called Timeless, because they said write another, you know, time travel show. And it was very different from Quantum Leap, but...
What happened there?
They decided they didn't want to do time travel. So I'm talking to Universal about other avenues for it, you know, if it's not NBC. But it just seemed like the best and the right place to go.
It would be amazing to see that come to fruition one day, hopefully. If not, is there plans of maybe making a book out of it or something?
Yes. They own the rights at this point. That's why, I wrote The Vision Quest, and we're doing a re-release hopefully this summer. And I think it's because we couldn't afford to go to the future in Quantum Leap. I wrote a whole series about Earth's future and, created a young hero and the kind of the empowerment of humanity against machines is really what The Vision Quest is about. So it's something to check out. And then...
You also have Age of Eve.
I have Age of Eve, yes. And another YA series that will probably not come out until 2015 called The Feel, that I'm co-authoring with a woman named Lynn Eisenberg. So, I'm busy writing. I've got films that I'm trying to do, but it seems like it's time for me to come back to TV. I think I bring something very unique to the world of television because in everything I write, there is a tug at our social consciousness. And I'm not ever going to beat you up, but I'm going to make you think.
And that's what good television's about, I think.
I agree.
As for the ending of Quantum Leap, some people love it, some people hate it. What do you think about it?
It was the last huge fight Don and I had about the show. Don wanted to bring him home. I said, I think there's life beyond this show, that the show could come back. And if he comes home, he's not out there saving the world, saving each individual in the world. And they know the ending, right? So I say he stays out. And in our heart, we know he's could possibly come into our lives and save our lives. And then the choices that Don made in writing that episode were very bittersweet because we never thought we were going to be canceled. Our ratings are great. We had a great following. They just couldn't figure out what to do with us. And his whole thing, about recreating his father's bar and Sam kind of meeting this wayward station, that was just Don needing to release some of his own demons in regard to losing this show that we loved so much. Now, the choices that he made were the choices that he made, but the big one to me was don't let him go home, and he listened to me, and I'm grateful for that.
I like the ending myself. I don't think everybody maybe wanted that ending, but I think it was the ending we all needed. We needed to know he was still out there.
I agree. Thank you. Yes.
And it was his choice to do it, so...
Yeah.
Why do you think Quantum Leap has remained so popular for 25 years?
It's great storytelling. Sam is a very compelling everyman that everybody that watches not only falls in love with him, but thinks that could be me. Not that everybody's a genius scientist or anything. But again, it's a show about hope. The letters that we used to get from people were so incredible. There was one episode, I can't think of the name of the episode, but the family had a child who was dying, and they were on, a cancer ward or something. And the family had gotten together, and then the rest of the ward got together, and they watched the episode. And at the end of the episode, they realized that they had given up on their child, and the show made them realize not to. And somehow or another, that rally to that child actually saved his or her life, her life. And to this day, I still get emails and letters and Facebooks updating me on the fact that because they didn't give up, that child went on to live a life.
Amazing.
That's pretty powerful.
Every little decision you make really does affect the future.
That's right.
Okay, thank you so much. And really a big fan and very grateful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.